Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Don Allen, Studio A. Over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good evening. How are you, sir?
Good evening, Mr. Allen, and the beautiful day here in the Twin Cities. Hell, we could be in Baltimore or New York or Washington or Los Angeles where they're having demonstrations. I understand police shot and killed a young African-American in L.A. yesterday. Well, of course, that's just becoming common. I guess we'll just designate him as a thug and just let it go at that, huh?
Yeah. And Mr. Edwards, I was speaking on the thug issue here. Just let me get there. Despite the lawlessness of the Baltimore Police Department, the mayor reserved her harshest comments today for those involved in the uprising, describing them as criminals and thugs. For anybody remotely aware of Rawlings Blake's mayoral history, her lashing out at the victims of police corruption and brutality would not have been surprising. That has went virtually viral across the internet of this African-American mayor.
Well, she first used the word thug at a press conference yesterday. She mm-hmm. was very passionate and vehement, if you will, about talking about thugs. And even the president slipped up yesterday while entertaining the Japanese prime minister and said thugs. I remind people of the education that Richard Sherman, the outstanding defensive back for the Seattle Seahawks, gave us in the Super Bowl of 2014 when a white female reporter tried to indicate if he thought he was a thug, and he had to remind her that he was a very – in fact, he is a very decorated student at Stanford University, very bright man, graduated cum laude and that kind of thing. He had to remind her that he was aware that the word thug was a code word by white folks in substituting the N-I-G when, you know, N-I-G's ain't around. But anyways, hey, you got Brother Nelson with you, and you and he cut him up this morning on one of the local stations, and I guess what this NAACP is kind of intensifying, if you will, coming out of a big meeting they had in Rochester, Minnesota last Saturday. Man, they had, they had actually more white people, almost three times the number of white people at the meeting than they did African-Americans?
Mm. The advancement of
yes,
the
sir.
People, yes.
Yeah, the word is that Minneapolis Foundation is going to spread enough money around, and we're going to change the name to Cinco de Mayo or something of the NAACP. Oops, probably shouldn't say that. But anyways, go ahead, Mr. Allen, get it rolling.
Yeah, we'd like to welcome Jamar Nelson, candidate for the president of the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP. Welcome, Mr. Nelson, to our show tonight.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Okay, I'd like to start out. You know, we were on AM 1130 News Talk Radio this morning for a good 45 minutes, where you kind of laid out your beginning platform, like the first 100 days, what things would look like, and now why are you running for the NAACP presidency, and what was the motivation behind that?
Well, I'm running because I think we've lost a lack of leadership. NAACP has. The leadership has become redundant. Obviously, that's pretty obvious with the vacations of every position there. And the people that are running, you got two candidates that are anonymous, and then you got another sister that's running that is a coward. To me, all three of my opponents are running cowardly campaigns. Ms. Levy Pounds is a member of the Black Lives Matter, and every time the stuff hits the fan, you cannot find Mrs. Pounds. She will not answer questions. So here's a lady that is supposed to be a part of another program, another organization, in which when there are problems that could face the community and you ask her for questioning, she's nowhere to be found. So I said to her that how are you intending on being a leader of this type of prestigious organization or leader of any black member in this community when adversity hits our community, she is nowhere to be found. That's okay. No leader.
Okay, with that said, I mean, what would you do differently? I mean, would you focus on economic development, education, police violence? I mean, is there some matrix that you have planned? I know it's early in the game and you're not elected, but I think our listeners international and domestically would like to know what someone as a candidate of the president of the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP actually be planning to do with that organization.
What are the whole plethora of things that we can attempt? But let's start with early childhood education. Okay, when you've got young kids, especially young minority kids that are using lunchrooms, are using schools as the lunchroom or at their dinner tables, it's hard to get them to focus. So we cannot continue to put the onus on these parents if they're coming from impoverished and single family homes. So we also need to focus on bringing jobs to the community. If you look at North Minneapolis, North Minneapolis is booming, except for if you drive around North Minneapolis and you go into certain neighborhoods, you can't tell because the success of a lot of the huge buildings and from these companies isn't trickling down into our communities. We are not hiring our people in the community. We would love, I certainly would love to have the very men that you claim to be thugs to be rebuilding our community. These are men that are proud to be not only black, but proud to be a part of their communities and would love to help rebuild it. So we have to focus on giving them jobs, because if you don't have jobs, you're going to have high crime, and you can't expect to curtail crime if there's no jobs.
Okay. Well, what about those that would argue in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities and the state of Minnesota and across the country, black faces in high places haven't helped average black people? You know, electing the African-American political leaders has done little to alleviate the suffering of black America. What would you do differently?
Well, here's the thing. You just said it. The one thing is it's a lack of leadership. That's the problem. When you get monies that are allocated for federally or state allocated monies and it is misappropriated, and you're not training our people properly, and they go on job sites and they're sent home because of their lack of training, that's a problem. That the buck has to stop with the leader. The leader has to work hand in hand with the mayor or be on top of the mayor for asking about jobs. Asking, and some sense having a quota system, as in, because if you're building my community and I drive around and I'm looking at the construction workers and I don't see any faces that look like me, well, how do I feel a part of this community if I'm not a part of rebuilding the community? So that means when the community is rebuilt, you're going to boot me out. That's not the way to go about it.
Well, you said something that was key. You know, we do have a black leader on top of the mayor, no pun intended. But on a more serious note, you know, this year marks the 50th anniversary of.
Damn, Don, I wondered when you were going to pick that up, but go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, I need to go back to some historical references here. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the many most significant events of the black freedom struggle of the 1960s. You know, 2 years ago, we celebrated the March on Washington. Last year, we recognized the 1964 Civil Rights Act that ended the Jim Crow apartheid in the South. Now, this year, we've already seen commemorations in the anniversary of the Voter Rights Act, and Summer's End, we'll see this, the third of August, I think, if I'm not mistaken, we'll see the 50th anniversary of the Watts Rebellion in Los Angeles.
Right.
So what is the difference between what's going on right now in downtown Minneapolis and Gold Medal Park, what's going on in Baltimore, New York, Houston, Los Angeles, in these protests? Do you think the focus has been taken away from the suspect reason and infiltrated by folks that, you know, could care less about a black man being killed and putting their own agenda? Because let me just tell you this, sir. I heard people today chanting, resist capitalism.
Right.
And that disturbs me when they have, you know, more white people than black people out here prone to testing, and one of the chants are resist capitalism. Now, give me your comments on that. Because I know we had kind of talked about that a little this morning, and I think it's important for our listeners to understand your point of view on this. Go ahead.
Well, again, to say that to resist that is absurd. Number one, we have to make sure that our people understand capitalism, and that's part of the problem is we don't understand it. Number one, because we don't have a lot of black people with businesses. Because how are you going to pay your rent if you're going to reject capitalism? The other problem is that's, again, it goes back to the leadership. You have to have a competent leader that insists upon informing our community, not having closed-door meetings and having not having open dialogue so that our members and our constituents could have a say-so. It starts with having a competent leader. We have lacked that over the last couple of years. I mean, look, the one thing I would say about Reverend Maxfield, I'm not here to bash the brother because I think that he's done some good things. The one thing I will say about him is he's very accessible. Nakima Levy Pounds, you can't find her, okay? The only place you can find her is on Google. That's it. Yeah, other than that, the sister doesn't answer any questions. We should have enough of lack of leadership, and electing her would be just that. Electing another leader that is going to run and hide, especially when the community is faced with adversity, what is she going to do? And she's shown in the face of adversity that she will do nothing but hide, and that's not acceptable.
Okay, basically what you're saying, what I hear you saying, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that everything is a production, everything is moving, and we have to have key leaderships to be a part of that production so that there is some output in the community for the African-American man, woman, and child in education, economic development. Now, how do you go about addressing those type of issues in an infrastructure that has sustained in a Jim Crow position in the Twin Cities toward the African-American individuals?
Well, again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I guess the one thing I'm going to continue to emphasize is the best social program for African-Americans and minorities is a job. You have to have a job. Listen, an education. Education is the key to getting you out of these improper neighborhoods. But here's the thing. We've got to quit looking inside, okay, and look outside the box. I understand that we deal with a lot of economical struggles. But the point is, again, back to the leadership, to have someone that is competently explaining to the people where the money's going, where the job's going, why isn't my child being educated correctly, why isn't the mayor on top of that, why isn't the school board on top of that. We haven't had leadership to hold all these particular people's feet to the fire. If you continue to ignore it, you're not doing our community a disservice, because our kids and the adults in our communities are suffering, and that's why we continue to have high crime, period.
Okay, our phone lines are open at 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904 if you'd like to ask candidate Nelson a question. Mr. Edwards, do you have any questions for the NAACP president?
Yes, I do, Mr. Allen, and I'm going to do it in a different form for this reason, because we want to be as transparent as we possibly can. My associate, Mr. Allen, is also a candidate for the executive committee of the NAACP, taking the position of secretary, and so,
yes.
You know, I can hear now some of the supporters of the professor indicating that this is a very one-sided, very shy-did, and tainted process, and so I will be asking Mr. Allen a series of questions, Mr. Nelson, so that we have the balance. I have no skin in the game, as they like to say. I'm not a member of the NAACP, if not a candidate, obviously, for any office of the NAACP, and et cetera. So I'm kind of the neutral. But let me do this before I ask my questions of Mr. Allen, my colleague here. Congratulations to the mayor and her stepdaughter, and the new position that the stepdaughter ascended to this afternoon in the opening of the culinary kitchen there on the grounds of the Minneapolis Public Schools. Miss LaSalle Cunningham, the daughter of Gary Cunningham, is the executive chef of the new cafe there, as well as apparently the chief kind of administrator. So just want to give a shout out. You know, it just goes to show you, connections pay off well.
Yes, right.
So congratulations.
It ain't what you know, it's who you know.
Stepdaughter, and ascending to the position of executive chef in the new culinary kitchen and operation there along the 1250 block of West Broadway. Now, my question to my colleague, Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen, what would you do different? Now, you know, Mr. Allen has had a most recent turn for, you know, a period of a couple months on the NAACP, but he has had an opportunity to understand the workings of the NAACP. As secretary, Mr. Allen, as a member of the executive committee of the NAACP Minneapolis branch, which will become operational as soon as the election concludes and all the officers are certified, what is your vision for the future of the Minneapolis NAACP?
Well, I would like to first start out by making sure there is documentation and full transparency as it pertains to meetings, or the movements that the organization makes, and the delivery of that information to the residents of the state of Minnesota. In Minneapolis, of course, included, but what I see is there is no historical, besides the time that you left the NAACP, Mr. Edwards, has not been any historical documentation. There has not been collaborations with the 17 to 20 Fortune 1,000 companies located here, headquartered in Minnesota. And I would like to see a re-engagement, a reboot of cordial diplomatic relationships so that we don't fall into that trap of sucking on the government teat and having our hands out and being down at the stadium asking them for money like this last round in the NAACP. So I see a lot of documentation that needs to be done, historical and otherwise. I see a lot of future planning. I see some things that, as secretary of the NAACP and coordinating with the president and the executive board and the appointed positions, a strong collaboration, a cohesion, if you will, of efforts to move our agenda forward. But not only that, to make sure that the community know that the NAACP of Minneapolis is live and well.
Now, on that particular point, this actually be the last question I would ask, but I would ask it of both yourself and Mr. Nelson, one who is running for secretary, but a member of the executive committee, the other who is running for president and a member of the executive committee. How would you go about approaching the importance of some minimal funding for the NAACP to be able to operate with a certain level of effectiveness and at the same time dignity? What would be your plan for fundraising, and are there any specific grant monies that either one of you gentlemen would be looking at to go after?
Well, if you don't mind, Mr. Nelson, I'd like to jump in on this one really quick.
Okay, all right.
I think, Mr. Edwards, I think there's an opportunity here that I just mentioned with the Fortune 1000 companies, from the top companies in the United States, where after we get the board and the appointments in place, after we have a solid website with the information to be distributed, a conduit for people to join the NAACP, some information about all the board members, I think we then open the door to collaborate with corporations. I mean, there is grant money out there, and I'm not sure myself as secretary-elect would go that route, because I really don't want philanthropic agencies to have their foot on the head of the Minneapolis NAACP. I'd rather go the corporate route like they did in the 1960s and 1970s here in the Twin Cities, and solicit funding for operations in a cordial diplomatic way and expedite it so that we can be up and running and at least have an office. Right now, the Minneapolis NAACP has nothing as far as a brick-and-mortar headquarters. So, I mean, that's what I would look at first.
All right. Mr. Nelson?
It's a little hard right now on the outside looking in, because I don't know what the records are like now, what monies are there or mishandled and things of that nature. But here's one thing I would do. I want to partner with certain businesses in our community that are continuing to build in our community. Full transparency about all of the monies that are allocated, that we will receive or receiving or look to get. Look, I don't claim to be some genius, and I will be learning on the fly too. But again, I think partnering with certain businesses to bring jobs to our community and employing members of our community is important. And again, and then having full transparency about what's happening with these monies and the allocation of the monies is important as well. And finally, just plain, I said transparency, but let me say it again, in layman's terms, just plain honesty. be honest about what's going on in the community with the organization. I think people just want to be flat out told the truth.
All right. Let me do this, gentlemen, and Mr. Delson, really this was a question to help you or any other candidate for the office during the election process on the second day of May at North Point. Because Mr. Allen has already had a tour of duty, if you will, however brief, Mr. Allen, I'm going to ask you this question.
Okay.
On the evening of December 13, 2013, as you were elected to the second vice presidency of the Urban League of Minneapolis,
NAACP.
How much money? NAACP. These organizations are changing leaderships. You got to keep up with them. We'll be having this discussion about the Urban League in probably about a month. What was the assets that the NAACP of Minneapolis had in the bank on the occasion of your election and on the occasion of the first formal meeting of the NAACP?
The first formal meeting, Yes. The first formal meeting, I was told there was a total of $700 in that neighborhood.
I'm sorry.
$700. To be,
you said $700.
$700 to be put into the account from the earlier December 13th membership and election, special election. I know that they were 2 or 3 months behind on rent. That was $300 or $400 a month on 4th Avenue up at that church up the street there from where we our new meeting place was at New Salem. And it wasn't in New Salem. This was another church where they had a small NAACP office.
Yes, the church of the former minister, Albert Gallman, who was a president of the NAACP about 8 years before he departed and relocated to Tampa, Florida. Oh, that's right. That was after $1 million in federal money
disappeared.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So on the night of the 13th of December 2013, the NAACP had a total assets of about $200, not counting the $400 or $500 that you got from your $11.37 cut from the $30 membership fee, right?
Exactly. But see, about approximately 150 people signed up. And that $30 a shot, Mr. Edwards, that was $4,500.
Uh-huh.
And I never understood why only just a little bit more than $700 was being deposited in our account. It never made any sense to me. And, you know, I could not – well, I did ask the – I don't care what they think. I did ask the questions and basically shut down because, you know, you had a board of Natanya Johnson, Lisa Clemens, Kim Yada – Flowers, we had T. McClintay, we had a couple other folks on the board who felt that.
You had the Somali woman, who later transferred her membership to St. Paul. But we will remember. And Louis, later you were joined by the very powerful political and community leader, Louis King, right?
Yep. And so, I mean, I could not get an answer otherwise. I mean, anyway, and it was really unusual because I told them, I said, hey, you know, we could do this. We could knock this out of the box, you know. And I thought that we had a great team in the beginning because, you know, Reverend Maxie and I don't necessarily see eye to eye, but, you know, if we joined forces, I think that it would have been a powerful organization. But, you know, people had their private agendas. And when you have a private agenda, you know, nothing's going to get done because you're going to work against the grain of everybody else in the group. And when you don't communicate with the people of the group or you don't have the acumen for the electronic communications, the email, the distribution on different social media levels.
Let me ask this question because it sounds like, you know, you may be rambling just a tad, if you will. Let me ask this question. Both of you, or just one of you, are successful and ascend to the position on the exec committee and the position that you were vying for. Would you accept a gift of, let's say, $5,000 from the Minneapolis Foundation with conditions?
I'm going to be quite honest with you. No. If you're that's kind of like your cousin bribing you for a ride to the liquor store. I'll buy you a bottle if you take me. No. If you want to give the money, let's give the money free and clear without conditions. And that's a part of what was going on, the problem the first time, is leadership accepting monies with conditions and being dishonest about it or not even putting it on the records. That's totally ridiculous that's all the funds that was there of record. This is what I mean. Too many of those
I'm afraid,
so-called
Mr. Nelson,
leaders.
That it's less than that now. But, Mr. Allen, I had the same question to you. Your response.
I would, no, not at all. I mean, I would like the money, but there could not be a condition where this is who we like and this is who we don't like, because the Minneapolis Foundation already has this guided giving where they have people that sit and decide who gets what, when, and how much. And I think that has killed the black community. So, no, I wouldn't take it.
All right. Well, Mr. Nelson, anything else that you would like to share with us or talk in terms of as you prepare for the election or election night, Saturday, May 2nd? Anything else you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, I would like to leave with this. First of all, let me thank you guys for giving me a platform to come on today and announce my candidacy. Let me say that I'm 37, and I know I probably still got a little bit of Similac on my breath or wet behind the ear, as the older folks like to say it. But here's the thing. I will look toward our elder members in the community, four of us. I will look toward guys like Don and you for advice. And actually, people like Reverend McAfee, too. I mean, I know some folks want to roll their eyes about him, but, again, the brother – is in touch with people, community. So you need to rely on certain people like that too. I think we need to get back to our old school values. That's what we're missing, and that's with even with my young age. That's exactly what I will bring is our old school roots, pure honesty, and aptitude for the leadership which we have lacked so long at the NAACP.
All right, all right, Mr. Nelson. I know on behalf of the Ronnie Donnie team, if you will, I want to thank you for coming on. Being very candid, as you have been over the years, and wish you the best of luck.
I appreciate that so much, guys.
All right. Thank you. All right. Mr. Allen, we didn't seem to have any calls coming in, though those phone lines are open, and if anyone wants to reflect on what the candidate for president, Mr. Nelson, for the NAACP, let me just be as absolute as possible. Mr. Nelson is a candidate for the presidency of the NAACP of Minneapolis, the contest that will take place on Saturday, May 2nd at 5 o'clock, starting at 5 at the North Point Health Center there in North Minneapolis. And Mr. Allen, my colleague, co-host, is a candidate for the position of secretary of the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP. By the way, all offices have been declared vacant by the National, and so there technically are no officials. I understand things are being run by Mr. Martin in St. Paul, and is it W.C. Jordan, the big, powerful state conference president, Mr. Allen?
Yes, he will be there also, and I think someone from the National will also be there too.
You're not talking about the possibility of the national director, the Honorable Reverend Gail Ford, who was so close to Reverend Goldman and others in the early 2000s, are you?
Yeah, they haven't confirmed or they have not denied it. So we'll have to we will have to see. They have not confirmed or denied. So
all right. Look, I want to, as we move into the last half hour, we're going to 9:30 tonight, I understand. I want to just touch on, because Mr. Nelson and to a lesser degree you talked in terms of the importance of economic uplifting and economic surge. I was a little taken back by documents that have now emerged that raise serious questions about the validity of numbers that showed up in a report dated January 15, 2015. But let me do this before we do that. I have just received a text from a confidential source but who thought it important. The mother, the biological mother, ladies and gentlemen, both our national and international, for our friends in Mother Africa, when the mother of Barwe Collins arrived at the international terminal this afternoon, this is rather disturbing. Our sources, which are close to the situation, indicated, and I will read the text as it was sent to me. I will not identify the sender of the text. As soon as Barwe's mother arrived and was attempting to leave the plane, the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and the Crystal Police stopped and detained her for questioning.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I understand the power of white authority in America, if you will. I mean, you know, we understand that. But given a mother that was coming to grieve the death of her child at the hands of possibly the father of the child, why, particularly in the arrangements, let me just say this. I just have to say this before I move on to the whole issue, Mr. Allen, of the falsified documentation. An anonymous source, a resident, a person of the state of Minnesota, understanding what this mother would be going through, actually made arrangements for a 30-day stay at one of the Hilton hotels. We will not identify the location, as well as provided a rental car and a driver. Now, you know, that's the way you certainly try to question people. You know what I'm saying, Mr. L?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I read the text sent to me by a source deep inside of the Liberian community. As soon as Barwe's mother got off plane today, the FBI and Crystal Police took and questioned her for a while. I just don't understand that. There is no evidence offered by the Crystal Police, the FBI, the Hennepin County Attorney, the Sheriff's Office, that in any way this mother, some way or another, was inside of the continental United States during the period of time that Barwe was being, searched for and et cetera. Do you not think, Mr. Allen, and certainly the phone lines are open for some reflection by our community that should be upset with that, could you not let this mother lay her son to rest in peace? I mean, you got all kinds of time to question her. She, in fact, can't get back on the airplane or even make reservations to leave the United States without the authorities, Homeland Security, and others knowing it. Just give me your observation, Mr. Allen, as a African American, as an activist, and et cetera. I mean, how do you see that kind of insensitivity? And what was the urgency of questioning her when there is no fugitive involved here? The person that has been identified as the sole person responsible for the murder of Barwe Collins is in a Hennepin County jail under lock and key. So what was the probative value of taking her off the plane, humiliating her in front of other passengers who had been on that 30-hour flight from Africa through the Netherlands or in Belgium, depending on which stop, either Brussels or Amsterdam? The plane was delayed. Security personnel delayed her. I mean, this has to be told. This is terrible, based on what is happening in this country to people of color. She was detained in New York City by NST personnel, other security personnel, Homeland Security, and et cetera. Her papers were triple-checked. There was even a communication back to the American consulate to indicate that this was the woman that had been given a special visa, which had been spoken for, Mr. Allen and listening audience, by the senior senator for the state of Minnesota, Ms. Senator Klobuchar. And so, I don't know. I don't want to exhaust this conversation. I assume that really people, I guess, don't care. It's all right. But what was the importance? What was the urgency? And, you know, that this woman, as she arrives in this country to begin the process of laying her son to rest, that you take her out to question her. I mean, what you going to question her about, man?
Yeah.
I don't know, Don. I really don't know. So, anyways, any thoughts on this?
Well, it's kind of disturbing. This is the first I've heard of it because I haven't seen it anywhere else and heard it anywhere else. And,
well, you heard it on your own program, okay?
Yeah, right. That said, there is a problem, and I mean, I guess there's going to be a snowball of issues behind that. We just have to see what develops. I mean, I'm a little bit disturbed by even harassing her as if she is a fugitive, you know, and that's what it seems like.
Or in this case, a suspect and who has returned to the scene of the crime. That would be the appropriate way to, you know, Sherlock Holmes would have put it. I mean, it's sad commentary. But anyways, let me just complete, because we don't want to lose this, because we have just examined documents and et cetera that have been put in our possession that shows a tremendous windfall for the African-American community in the construction of the Viking Stadium. Mm. So I just want to pass that on to our listening audience, both locally, domestically, internationally. The documents that have been authored and published by the Sports Facility Authority and our good friend Alex Tittle, who was on a urban contemporary station this past Sunday talking in terms of the great job they've done. Do you know, Mr. Allen, that over between Ryan Construction, which is a minor prime contractor doing work not on the stadium but in and around the stadium, which is interesting, but that Thor and Mortensen have paid out $69 million? In salaries and compensation to African Americans and people of color. And by the way, we've been talking about that number. I now have in the confidential file African Americans. This is for our listening audience out there, all the people that said they were going to get the numbers and never really tried to ask the questions. 134,000 hours were worked by African Americans. And that was as of January of this year, 134,000 hours, over $69 million, if you will. And I tell you, that's just outstanding. And so we have certainly a harvest that has taken place in our beloved community as it pertains to the outlay from working on the stadium. These documents can be found within the confines of the Sports Facility Authority. There's one problem, Don, that I want to mention. The Legislative Act of 2012 that created all of the entities and authorized the construction of the stadium indicates that the legislative auditor, Mr. Noble, man we were just talking about, Don, right, just a couple weeks ago, who was preparing to investigate the Urban League of Minneapolis, was supposed to and was directed by law to issue a audit report of these kinds of numbers, and lo and behold, it hasn't been done. Mm. He's two reports behind as of now. And if he would have done that, one of the things that he would have found out, Don, do you remember this very powerful employment assistance firm that was put together by Mr. King and those powerful gentlemen? You remember that? Remember? That entity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know that. Unfortunately, with all of the recruitment that they were doing and going out in community and etc., that in the zip codes of the 317,000 hours that minorities, quote unquote, worked, which included 134,000 hours for African Americans. Do you know that the people that live in the area that is, well, the area represented by Senator Bobby Joe Champion, through that process, do you know they had a grand total of 129 hours?
Oh, wow. Not good.
Yeah. And this is for our listening audience. Anybody want to call in and get greater detail, if you will? Now, there's another document that shows a little bit larger number based on zip codes. Also, Mr. Allen, be advised that no black veterans seem to have been hired. Remember, there was a provision there. You remember your question way back in January of 2012. when Velma Corvell said that there was no requirement for veterans to be on the site. Well, in the documents that have been recovered on this end, quite a bit of discussion about veterans, but it doesn't look like any colored veterans got any employment on the site. The total number for veterans an hour is about 39,000. But the key is that these numbers have not been certified.
Mm-mm.
And the legislative auditor has not issued a report and a summary of the authenticity and the certification of these numbers. But a lot of money has been paid out. In fact, we were looking at the group of you understand what I'm talking about, Don, when I talk about employment assistance firm?
Mm-hmm.
Because actually where that firm's name – do you know where that firm's name was listed from?
No, I don't know.
It was listed directly out of the language under employment, talking in terms of a firm doing business as an employment assistance firm would be contracted with it, preferably, this is the specific language, that it would be either a minority-owned, woman-owned, or owned by a disabled human being. And do you know that what our friends did in July and August of 2013 under the auspices of Mr. Tittle, they just took, you know, the name in the legislation, employment assistance, and I know you're getting all kinds of texts there. Getting them here. That they just took the name, lifted it, and made it into a corporation that no one can find any information on, but they got a $700,000 contract. You remember that, Don? We talked about that quite a bit on these programs. They got a $700,000 contract, but no one can find or identify what kind of work and experience they had prior to October 13th, when in the report of January 15th, 2015, Mr. Tittle and his associates talk in terms of the awarding of a contract for over $700,000. You remember that because we all talked about that and made references in our respective mediums. So it's now difficult to determine where in the heck that $69 million in salary, where that went.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking around. Do you see it, Don? And we, you know, we asked that question of anyone in the listening audience that desires to call in. Can we identify that $69 million?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking around here. I'm actually on the page. I'm looking at the construction utilization, workforce utilization goals, and the
there you go.
Inclusion of the and we've got Mortensen Thor, $69 million in MBE.
As already announced, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes,
mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, you know, that's a lot of money, Mr. Edwards. I don't see no new Cadillacs or gold chains or, you know, the things that you would normally see, I guess, if you could be stereotypical. But, no, I don't see any uplift at all whatsoever in the community behind the stadium at all whatsoever.
Well, I don't see the legislative auditor's report. Mr. Noble's the same man that is now investigating the Urban League for problems with education money. And I'm a little disappointed that Senator Champion did not provide that copy of the legislative auditor's audit. Oh, I'm sorry, that's right. The legislative auditor did not audit or certify these numbers. And just want to say that the companies, or are they companies? I don't know, Don. Maybe that's something we have to ask. EAF. You know, is and there is a particular, you have the document there, you probably go to page 11, if you would, in the report, and you see an employment assistance firm, and there's Mr. Tittle's declaration that that in October of 2013, they signed a contract, and in January of 2014, the Metropolitan Stadium Facilities Authority made a formal request of the EAF to provide a projected workforce and et cetera. And they have some heavy players there. I'm looking at my document, in fact, at the logos. We had the Minneapolis Urban League. We had OIC. We had something called the St. Paul Colleges. Some way or another, the St. Paul YMCA disappeared. We have Duff Consultants. we have Stairstep. Stairstep, one of your favorite firms. We have CSI.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but the other thing that we have that I'm a little uneasy at, I'm looking at two documents right now on the air here, which were contained in documents I'm quite sure wasn't supposed to be made available, in which the employment assistant company firm, or doing business as EAF, put out two documents. Let me do these two particular dates, because I know that you guys always talk about pasting. You guys talk about how to, you paste things, you get something. It's a document, and you just keep pasting it and pasting and pasting it and identify different dates, right? Is that what pasting is?
Yes. You get copy and paste.
Okay, well, that. I'm looking at, let's say, the two most so-called recent documents. One, as of the end of December 31st, 2014, and the last one at the end of February 28th, 2015, and I'll be doggone if they don't have the exact same figures. Each and every one of the 13 entities that I just identified, some of them previously, they have the same numbers. Now, these guys have picked up about $330,000, according to Alex Tittle in a copyrighted story, again, in that terrible newspaper, the Minneapolis Star Tribune. But they were recruiting people in the area of carpentry, sheet metal, if you will, electronics, pipe fitters, plumbers, you know, iron workers, elevator mechanics. And says, by the way, when's the last time you've seen a black man working on an Otis elevator in Minnesota?
I haven't seen that since it had to be 1980 at Harold's, formerly on Nicollet Mall. It was the last time.
Yes.
And
yes.
His name was Randy Tucker.
Yeah. So, anyways, just wanted to. Because I'm calling upon tonight because, you know, I had asked the Council on Black Minnesotans chairman when he was on the program a month and almost 2 months ago. I had asked him, begged him to exercise their authority and request copies of the information that, you know, we obviously now have in our hands. I asked that be done by April the 1st. It's almost May the 1st. Have we heard anything back from the council? Did they make any attempt to extract this information from the State Human Rights Director and from the Stadium Facility Authority? And the phone lines are open, by the way. I mean,
yes, phone lines
anybody
are open.
Who wants to take exception, if you will, challenge us and et cetera, telephone lines are open.
Okay. They are wide open. Let me just give that number real quick, Mr. Edwards. It's 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Just got a text from Duluth, Kathy, from the Duluth NAACP. I was just wondering what's going on down here. I just asked her to call if she could, and we can go from there.
Most welcome to. We've got about, Mr. Allen, about 11, 12 minutes.
Yes.
We need to know why card-carrying members in Duluth, other than Claudia Washington, the contested president, were not made aware that there was a training session for NAACP members. NAACP members, not many of the folks that showed up in Rochester who are not yet members. They'll get their membership because the money has already been distributed to them by philanthropic organizations. But we'd sure like to hear from Duluth because I just can't understand why the young lady and her cabinet were not invited to the training session in Rochester. I'm not understanding. Mr. Allen, I just don't understand what's going on here.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can get in touch with her and see if she will give us a rundown and maybe an answer to that question. So I actually have an intern giving her a call on the back end here.
Okay.
And we do have do we have another caller here? Oh, look out. Stand by, Mr. Edwards. Stand by here.
We have a caller?
Yeah, no, go ahead for a minute. I have to go to the back end and talk to somebody real quick just to see exactly what they're talking about here real quick. Give me a second.
Okay, oh, we don't have a caller, though. Okay.
No,
all right, I'll just continue on the documentation that has been forwarded by the Sports Facility Authority, not certified by the legislative auditor. Again, we call your attention to the statutory requirement for the legislative auditor to quote-unquote deal with this issue. It is at page 9 of the legislation at line 1.4. It specifically indicates the auditor and et cetera. The specific language dealing with employment is at section 17 of the legislation, in which it's just amazing how the organization or the group of organizations that came together decided to use the same name for their firm that was identified in the ordinance, if you will, as being what was being looked for. I mean, you can say in this country, you can always use doing business as, I guess, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a little bit uneasy with regards to research that has been done since January, because just can't find any kind of documentation about the existence of this entity. This company that received $750,000 in Minnesota taxpayer dollars that seems to have no history. I'm not quite sure how that worked. We had asked the question, by the way, the program and tapes of these programs, as well as the tapes of my television program, I had raised this question back in 2012 about how some of this was going to be accomplished, if you will, and then when the announcement was made that a $700,000 contract had been awarded to this company, if you will, I wondered what their experience was.
Uh-huh.
And basically I heard back that it was really none of my business, if you will. Again, very powerful conglomeration, if you will, Stair Step Foundation, if you will, Minneapolis Urban League. I hear you back, Mr. Allen, with us.
Yes.
The powerful, powerful OIC, CSI, if you will, St. Paul Colleges, and et cetera. And I was just trying to find out why the numbers haven't changed. And I repeat again, looking at the numbers on the documents that were posted by the Sports Facility Authority. And as we said before, these documents look all the same. They're actually, all the numbers, everything is the same, okay? But we assume that the organizations in question, because one of the things that the legislative auditor was supposed to demand was that each of these organizations identify what specifically they did and how they spent the money. Even Mike Kozaba and the Star Tribune tried to hint at that, but I guess they made a decision that they weren't going to press too far ahead. We repeat again that there should be documentation which indicates that these entities that I've just named that are part of the firm, company, / what kind of work did they specifically do, what kind of hours did they put in, because they, as a group, I guess, have been the recipients of about now $320,000 of a $700,000 contract.
That's a lot of money.
That contract was paid off with money from the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. Mr. Allen, you back with us? We have any kind of
phone? Yeah, I am back. And joining us live on the air is Chrissy Dudley from the Duluth branch of the NAACP.
Ah, welcome.
And the reason I had asked her to call in, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, there was some there was a meeting. Welcome, Classy. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you for inviting me. How are you?
Okay.
Well, thank you for being with us. It's good to hear your voice. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. You had had a discussion off air with her. Go right ahead.
Well, I just wanted to tell her, because you had asked the question, Mr. Edwards, about who got notification. And I just wanted to bring her up to speed and let her know what we're talking about. You know, there was a training in Rochester, Minnesota last Saturday, Classy. Did you get a notification from the state conference chair?
I sure did not. And, you know, ironically, I do hold one of the seats in the state conference. I'm the chair of communications, so I didn't even get an invitation.
Because we're breaking up. Mr. Allen, you got to do a little better job with this sound over in your studio. Did I hear you say, Ms. Dudley, that you are the communications chair? Are you the chair of the communications committee of the state conference?
Yes, I actually talked to WC about that not too long ago when he visited Duluth, that I haven't been getting any notifications from him directly about when any of our committees would meet or getting any kind of other notification from any of the branches' communication chairs. And he has yet to get back to me, and I have yet to get any kind of notification from him or anybody else about any of our meetings.
Let me do this as an old-timer who knows the inside. I would encourage you, and if you need any help, feel free to contact me privately. I would encourage you to send a protest to the president, the newly elected president of the NAACP, asking for an examination on why the Duluth branch, and particularly you as president-elect, were denied our communication and an opportunity to come to the training session in Rochester, Minnesota. I would definitely encourage you to do that, and if you desire, I will assist you in preparing the necessary document and petition to the national board.
Yes, funny you say that. Actually, last election cycle, the branch actually submitted a formal petition. It was against some of the decisions that Reverend Ford made, as well as our questioning our finances. And we had a list of everything that we hadn't been getting answers in from the last 3 years of our local NAACP. And we have not heard a response. I believe that the last board meeting was in New York in February, and they were supposed to be reviewing our branch. And I talked to a couple of my close friends who are actually national board members, and they said that Reverend Ford didn't even put it on the agenda.
Why am I surprised? Why am I not surprised?
but we did set on petition. It went directly in accordance with the NAACP bylaws and constitution. It was in the specific amount of time. We had the right signatures. We sent it to not only our new CEO, President Brooks, but we also sent it to several of the board members and the departments of the NAACP, so like the General Counsel, and we even sent it to the Washington Bureau. We wanted some answers, and we didn't get any response from anybody. Actually, I take that back. There was a one board member from Oklahoma, Anthony Douglas, who did respond, and he said, well, I don't know what you want to do because it wasn't on the agenda. And then there was question of, like, well, do we pursue, do we not? We did find out through all of that that our branch hasn't filed for any kind of status with the national for the last 3 years, and our President Claudia Washington filed for the last 3 years in the last year, 2014, at the last national convention, which we want to discuss as a branch, saying that since we weren't in compliance or inactive, that we feel like he shouldn't have even been a candidate on the last election cycle.
Yes, because, see, I well remember through my sources within the NAACP and the national board, The Duluth branch was actually declared invalid, and everything was vacated because your branch had slipped below 50 dues-paying members in good standing. Claudia Washington had been operating for years with mm-hmm. the Duluth branch, though he was enjoying all of the amenities of a president. Mm-hmm. The branch did not have the required number of dues-paying members to be constituted as a legitimate branch. And Claudie Washington hid that information along with the woman who was his secretary for quite some time. And that had periodically come up at a couple of regional conferences. But what basically happened is that regional, the director at that time and the state conference person at that time, and then later W.C. Jordan joined in that. That's why there was so much controversy when you were elected as the new president of the branch, that they did not want you to ever get into the files. In fact, I do understand that some of the files that would indicate that the branch was not a branch in good standing have been shredded by Mr. Washington.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. This is our first time we'll be having an audit, and I can't even recall how many years, and that's
wow.
how we actually found out that we haven't been filing with the state or with the national. And
yes.
I do have on paper, as well as some of the rest of the executive committee, have the finances that the school district has been funding us thousands and thousands of dollars, which I believe haven't been accounted for, but I don't want to jump the gun completely yet. But I know if we haven't been filing for the last 3 years, we shouldn't have been taking in that kind of money.
Yes. I will say this to you over in the air, and I assume my colleague Mr. Allen has some statements. Based on that education situation, in fact, I will say this to you. A decade ago, I was invited by citizens of Duluth to journey to Duluth and to meet and actually made a presentation back then. And that's when I became aware of the fact that Mr. Washington and his supporters had been the recipient, and it was easy for Mr. Washington to do because, as you and your father know, a decade ago, he was also the City of Duluth Purchasing Director. And in that position as a city official, he was able to get away with some things, and he was able to block some information up front. I'm glad you found that out. I shudder, though, to say to you, what you're going to find if the audit is ever done. Can I ask who is doing the audit? Is this the national office in Baltimore, or who's doing the audit?
Absolutely not. We asked for an independent audit outside of any kind of NAACP entity. So our treasurer is, while she's getting some of the paperwork ready, we do have that independent audit, and auditor, and I'm not exactly sure what his name is, but he also works for I believe the city.
Well, you have to keep in mind Mr. Washington's affiliation for over 20 years as an official of the City of Duluth, and particularly acting, of all things, as the city's purchasing director.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any questions on your end, Mr. Allen?
No, I was just very interested to find out if she got a notification, because I got a notification the day before. Less than 12 hours, and I can't make moves like that. I'm sorry. And now I know that you're the chair of the communications.
Chair of the communications committee. Yeah.
Did you know that there's an election here Saturday, Classy?
There was an election.
There's an election coming up on Saturday for the Minneapolis NAACP. Special election. Yeah, you didn't know about that?
I had no idea.
Very
because Mr. Allen is running for secretary of the Minneapolis branch.
Really?
All the Minneapolis officers and seats had been ordered vacated by the national about a month ago.
Oh, wow. I was not aware.
And you're the communications chair. I want to get this right. Communications chair of the state conference.
Yeah.
Wow. And W.C. Jordan and Gail Ford made sure that none of that information was imparted to you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'd like to invite you to join us at a much earlier time next Wednesday. I'd like to try to have you and your father, if you would, but definitely you at let's say 8:35 next Wednesday. And get into a more deeper conversation on what has happened. I would encourage you to certainly ask the state conference chair, Mr. Jordan, to explain why you have not been communicated with. and then I'd like for you to be able to tell the world what it was he told you.
Yes.
Yes, I would like to do the same.
Right. All right.
Okay.
God's safety and Godspeed, if you will, and we look forward to hearing from you next Wednesday night at about 8:35 p.m. Central Standard Time.
All right. Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah,
thank
well,
you.
Okay. Really appreciate it. We'll contact you.
No problem.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, Mr.
Well, Mr. Allen, we run a little bit over. I don't know if you contacted the blog, but we're a little bit over, so I don't know if they'll punish us or not, but I guess it's time to have what you ready for James Brown to take us home. Boy, that's some startling information we've been hearing.
Yeah, actually, we'll do Grandmaster Flash. Don't push me. I'm too close to the edge on behalf of
all. Yeah, right. Okay, let James Brown take us home, Mr. Allen. This is the Donnie Rock.
It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.